Hey, what's up, everybody? How are you all doing today? My name is Jordan McCracken Foster, and I'm a teaching artist here at Art Prof, and I'm here today with the Prof Lou herself, and we are going to be doing another section on how to draw clothing, this week specifically on the zigzag fold. And if you want to learn how to make your artistic weakness your strength, definitely check out artprof.org, where we have lots of free content, tutorials, critiques, and art dares, and all that fun stuff. So, Clara, why don't you get us started on this week?
Yeah, we've actually done at this point a lot of streams. I believe we only have one more after this, the spiral fold. And so Jordan and I were talking about how in doing all of these streams, we've had a couple realizations about some of these folds and what's trickier and what's more straightforward. So, for example, the fold that we recently did was this half lock? I think it was half lock, yes. Which actually had a lot of crossover with zigzag, because this one that we did from the movie Black Klansman, I mean, that's kind of an awesome zigzag fold on that leather jacket, right?
Yeah, I think that's what made it so challenging. And I remember working on this one for quite a while because I was like, what's going on here? Like, it's not just one, it's like, you know, three different folds all in the same thing. So yeah, it was a challenge, but it was a good challenge, a good artistic challenge.
By the way, those of you guys who have been following this series, and maybe some of you have drawn along, have you guys noticed that there's any particular fold that was extra challenging or one that was easier than the others? Because I'm curious to hear that. Now, this one was a pain, the moving fold. This one drove me bad. I don't know. Did you find this one hard?
I actually found it really fun because I felt like I could kind of make it up a little bit. Like, all it needs to do is flow. And as far as proportions, stuff like that, I could kind of make that up and no one will really notice. You know.
I don't know. Lupita's dress was a little out of control for me. I felt like it was just so all over the place. I don't know. Maybe it depends on the outfit, but I found moving fold pretty tough to do.
That's fair. Plus, you're using a different tool than me. I'm just using Procreate, and you're having all the colors to juggle and stuff, so that might have an effect too.
All right. And now we have the diaper fold. And can you explain to people what the diaper fold is, Jordan?
Yes. So for a quick review, diaper fold is when you have two points of tension that are usually higher up. So in the case of Zendaya here, it's right about at her hip. And you could see that when it connects, it creates this little triangle shape fold, and that is a diaper fold. You could see it on like curtains and shoulders and things as well.
I definitely, Jordan, have learned to identify certain folds by different pieces of clothing. Like the zigzag that we're doing today is totally the jacket fold. Like anytime somebody's wearing a jacket, especially leather jackets, They really pop out. And so today when I was looking for reference photos, I was like, who wears leather jackets in movies?
Yeah, that's a good way to go. I mean, why take a long time to look for reference when you just know the answer? It's leather jackets. That's all you gotta do.
So it looks like, Jordan, a bunch of people like Catherine is saying, I think dead folds are hard, and so did Jill. Why do you think the dead fold was tricky for people?
I think because it's so random. You know, there's not really any rhyme or reason to it. It's on the floor and there's a cloth and that's about it. Everything else is just up for grabs. So you can either go with the reference or you can make it up or you can do a combination. And I think sometimes that can become overwhelming for people. At least that's what would intimidate me. I don't know. I'm curious, you guys in the comments who said that, what your reasoning is for why it's so difficult.
Yeah, like Jill is saying, yep, no motion in the dead fold. I think for me, what was hard about the dead fold is that you don't have that really visible tension because everything's all like weird and squid-like. If you look at Lady Macbeth right now, the upper section of her body, you can feel the tension, like the fabric is stretching. And the bottom, it just like goes bleh, and you don't really have a lot of control.
Yeah, it's like there's almost too many options. You know, it's like a buffet. It's like, what do I do for this?
So we have not done the spiral fold yet, but we will be getting to it. I'm just give me a minute, Jordan.
Take all the time you want, Claire. I am so used to this by now. It's like the fourth time you've done this.
I'll explain more, but I edited a video for 10 hours on Saturday. I deserve a few seconds.
Okay.
Now, apparently, Mulan is the queen of the zigzag fold. I found so many pictures of her where the zigzag fold was really obvious. So what is the zigzag fold, Jordan?
It's pretty self-explanatory. It's literally a fold around a cylindrical shape, like an arm or a leg, and it creates this diamond or zigzag shape. And you can find it in legs or in arms. That's the most common place you'll see them.
For some reason, Asian action films also tend to have a lot of zigzag folds. Like, sometimes I would actually search based on the genre, because I'm like, okay, what Victorian era like movies would have the diaper fold? Like, it's really funny trying to find reference photos.
That's true, because I feel like even the pipe fold, we found a lot of old school references from like Victorian era dresses and things like that.
I'm curious, tell us in the chat, in general, when you guys are just looking for a reference photo, just any reference, not necessarily of clothing, do you guys find it hard? Because it takes me forever to find like just the right photo that's going to really explain that. Now, some people might find it a little bit unusual to have a animated movie in here to illustrate folds, because I know a lot of people, when they want to draw clothing, they want it to look fairly realistic. They want to do the shading and the highlights and everything. But actually, Jordan, I think doing it in an animated character is harder.
It is hard. Trust me. One of my characters has his sleeves rolled up just like this character. And that's always like the most challenging part to draw, is like, how many folds do I put? Does it look right? And I'm redrawing it over and over again. So I can attest that it is challenging for animated characters.
And also, I think with animated characters, oftentimes you don't do shading or blending, and you're dealing with these very flat colors. And so in a lot of ways, the shapes that you put down, because they're so definitive, you can't futz with it. You really have to be very confident about what you want to do with that shape.
Exactly. Yep.
Mulan, again, thank you very much, Mulan. Mulan made my life so much easier. She probably cut back on about an hour of reference photo searching. And this one, by the way, also has the half lock fold. So how many of you guys also in the chat have started seeing these folds in real life? When are you noticing these as you guys walk around? What is it about the jacket, Jordan? Is it just the sleeves? I don't know. I feel like usually jackets are made out of thicker material, so the zigzag's more obvious.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes the material just makes it a little bit more stiff, and it makes the planes a little bit easier to see. Also, the fact that it's a cylindrical object. In this particular case, this jacket's not very loose, and so it won't really look. There'll be smaller folds rather than the large ones that we've seen in the Mulan reference photos that you've been showing.
So a lot of people are agreeing about reference searches. Like Seven Angelic says, reference searches can be so hard to get right. I always end up cobbling together stuff, which I guess is better. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to work harder, of course, but it definitely can get you much better results. Dr. Gaylord says, I search Pinterest for hours to find a good reference, but almost always end up just doing a reference for myself. Do you take a lot of your own reference photos, Jordan?
When I'm physically able to, because I live by myself, I have to take my own reference. And it's like, if I can't get the right angle, then we're just searching online or playing guessing games the whole time. So, so it becomes very challenging. But the good thing is I understand a lot of these principles. And so as long as I have that knowledge, I can often kind of figure it out and make adjustments as needed.
Blue Wolf says, I think everyone should wear black leather jackets all the time. That way they're easier to draw. That's a good tip. Maybe that would be so much easier on all of us for articulating all those forms.
Like a night story in Greece all day.
I should have looked up Grease. Oh, I'm such an idiot. That would have been perfect. There's so many jackets in that movie. Oh, I'm so stupid.
Maybe there's some spiral folds that you can use for next time.
That's true. There's probably going to be some spiral folds. Okay. There are some zigzag folds in Jane Eyre. And I just think if people don't know what Jane Eyre is, I got to make sure you know who the protagonist is. And so here's a visual. Just, you know,
absorb this. He's even moving. Look at that. Oh, still images wasn't good enough anymore. We've advanced.
Well, the still images are fine. They serve their purpose. But there's something about the blink of the eye.
It's just okay.
So good.
Okay.
All right, guys, you ready to start drawing? Because I am, because I have not drawn in a few days and I feel kind of grouchy. You ever do that, Jordan?
Ooh, I'm going to tell the art police. And draw. Oh my gosh. No, there are days where I have to take time off because of just being tired or something.
All right, I am going to be using a combination of Faber-Castell colored pencils, and I'm also going to use these Caran d'Ache crayons. I find that the Caran d'Ache crayons work great over the colored pencil, but not the other way around. You can't really draw a colored pencil on top, so I sometimes use the crayons to heighten the color, to make the highlights a little bit stronger. So that's what I'm going to be using. Obviously, Jordan's going to be doing Procreate, and who are we drawing? Who are we going to start with, Jordan?
Michael Jackson, one of my favorite music artists of all time. Yeah, I've been waiting for this moment, guys. I've been waiting.
Guys, I did this just for Jordan. I was like, okay, this is going to make Jordan very happy today.
Yes. Now I just got to resist the urge to hum all of his music while drawing.
Well, the reason I thought of it is because I was like, oh, well, if I'm going to bother Jordan about all these Jane Eyre photos, I better throw him a bone. So I was like thinking, oh, well, maybe there's some zigzag folds in Avatar: The Last Airbender, but there weren't. Like, nobody has a single zigzag fold. Like, it's all pipe folds.
Probably because it's hard to draw and animate.
Oh, you think that's why?
It might be. I mean, it's hard for me to do zigzag folds. But also just, I think it might have to do with the style of the clothing that they're doing. So, yeah, there's a lot of loose clothing in there.
So anyway, I tried, Jordan. I did my best.
Hey, no, this was great. This was great. I'll be honest, though, I'm surprised that you didn't choose like Beat It or Thriller or Billie Jean, where he's always wearing leather jackets in here.
Well, you know what's funny? I tried to find photos of the red leather jacket from Beat It, but all the photos were such bad resolution that you couldn't really see very well. So that was why I didn't use those.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
Actually, Jordan, look at this. Do you see the purple-yellow relationship between Michael's jacket and the arm on the right?
That is such a nerdy art thing to say. But yes, I do see it.
Well, I'm just laughing because we just did the purple-yellow stream the other day.
Oh, that's true. That's right. Color schemes. Well, this is the 70s. Color was the thing. Even though I wasn't alive yet, I feel like I probably should have been. Like, as much as I appreciate, like, the culture and the, you know, all the history and stuff, I feel like I should have been born at that time. But, yeah. It's too late now. Too late. Can't do nothing.
I was born in the 70s, but I was really young.
Yeah, I feel like I should have been born in like 67 so I could have appreciated this era of music. Of course, that would make me like 52 now, but you know, maybe it's worth it.
Is that because you like Motown and you wanted to grow up when Motown was big?
Yes, I love Motown. When I used to work at the little party store, I would my favorite days were the ones where they would play Motown. Like any song, it'd be the Supremes, and then it'd be Marvin Gaye, and then it would be Temptations, and it'd be the Jacksons, and you know, all that stuff. Those were always my favorite days.
So one of the reasons I thought of the Jackson 5, Jordan, was I was listening to a different playlist from my workout routine, which is weird. I don't usually do that, but it was my like pop playlist, and the Jackson 5 came on, and I was like, oh my God, I have to do that for Jordan.
Yes. It's so easy to make me happy, everyone. Just so you all know.
Well, we all know what you need, right?
Yeah. Need some good music. Good music.
Seven Angelic says, where's the Zendaya animation for Jordan? You're right. I probably should let him have one slide of Zendaya.
Yes. Yes. We will discuss this, Claire. We got to get one of my celebrity crushes in there other than, because I'm outnumbered here, you know? You see Hugh Jackman and Fender and Benedict all the time, like, where's the Zendayas? Where's the, you know, all the others?
Actually, Jordan, you know, I think is one of the funniest Jackson 5 songs. You know the one that it's like, I think it's called like, I'll Be There. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Yes,
it's like Michael Jackson, he's 5 years old. He's like, I'll be there to take care of you. I'm like, you're five. You're not going to take care of me.
I think he's more like 11, but I get what you're saying. It is funny. you know what I heard, actually? You know Who's Loving You? You know that one?
No, I don't know a lot of the songs by title, but anyway.
I'm not going to sing it, but there's a version of the song that the Jackson 5 sang, and he actually absolutely crushed it, and he's a little kid. And this person who wrote the song is Smokey Robinson. And Smokey Robinson to this day will go on tour and kids will come up to him and be like, I didn't know you sang Michael Jackson songs. And he's like, boy, I wrote that song.
That's awesome. Oh my God, I love that.
Wait, can you imagine being outshined by an 11-year-old? Like that's something. That's, you gotta give him props for that.
Well, if you're Michael Jackson and you're like, dancing and singing when you're five. I mean, he was incredible.
Yes. Huge talent. Huge talent. That's why that's another reason why I'm a huge fan of Stevie Wonder, just so young and so brilliant.
Well, he's so distinctive. You know, like there's nobody like him.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Elizabeth says, Jordan, my mom raised me on Ray Charles, Little Richard, Bats Domino, etc. I didn't even know what the Beatles were in my freshman year of college, and you were born in 1961.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that was like the height of Beatles mania. So that's very impressive, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I mean, I was raised on this stuff too, because there's a lot of music that my mom didn't want me to listen to as a kid. And when mm-hmm. I was about, I would say 11 or something, we inherited my grandfather's music collection. He was a huge jazz guy, and he had all these full of the 70s, like huge, giant playlists. And so we had this 3-disc CD, each with like 40 songs on it. And it was all these classics from the 70s, like Car Wash, Rapper's Delight, and, you know, Ain't No Mountain, or maybe that's a 60s song. But anyway, just all this stuff. And it was phenomenal. It really kind of introduced me to all that stuff, and to this day it has left such an impact on me.
Was that all on vinyl?
No, these were CDs. This was like one of those
CDs, okay.
Yeah, it was like a collector's set, you know. Yeah.
So I don't know about you, Jordan, but this gesture of his shoulder and arm and the tilt of the head, it's hard.
Yeah, it's tricky, especially because the other half of his body is covered up. You know, yeah, he's kind of like reaching over Jackie's arm, so it's like, yeah, got to make it up.
Well, it's also hard because I feel like anytime you have a hand that's going like into the elbow, you have to really think about the interaction. It's sort of like, you know, when people like put their fingers together like this, and it's like, oh man, I don't want to draw that, you know?
Yes, I hate those poses. The worst. Oh my gosh. I've done them so many times, but I still hate them. There's nothing fun about it. There's nothing fun about those.
Do you think that's a leather jacket? I don't think that's a leather jacket. Do you think it's more like a windbreaker she's wearing?
It looks like leather to me.
Really? Do they make purple leather? I have no idea.
They're the Jackson 5 in the 1970s. I think they could make it work.
Okay.
If they can pull off 5 unique costumes with sunflowers on them, you know, including one with the collar and one on, you know, the leg and one on the belly and all that. They can totally pull off a purple one.
Valerie says, imagine being raised to Bon Jovi, Nirvana, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Motley Crue, and Led Zeppelin. Says a lot about my mom. That's my generation. Okay, Jordan, do you know about all those Guns N' Roses people?
I've heard the name, but I've never actually listened to the music.
Okay, here's the test of whether you guys are truly Gen X. Can you sing Paradise City by Guns N' Roses? Because Jordan, there's like one sentence in that whole song and they just say it over and over again. It's the most obnoxious song.
I definitely couldn't sing. I'm at the tail end of millennials. Yeah, I don't know.
So you're a young millennial?
Yep, I'm the last. Yeah, I was born in 95, so I'm at the tail end of millennials. Depending on what website you go on, the cutoff is either 95 or 96.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know. You know, it's actually really fun to talk about generational stuff here because we have people who are from like all generations. Like we totally have every generation represented on every single stream we do in terms of the audience. It's like really cool.
That is cool. I appreciate that. I feel like there's probably some sort of battle, like, of who is the best, though. The other day, I was talking to a friend of mine who was, I think she was born in 75, and she was reading this thing about how, like, we were the last generation to do this, the first one to do this. We were raised going outside and not worrying about getting kidnapped and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, why you gotta flex? Like, what's up with that? Like, I don't understand.
Well, it is funny because once you start realizing you're old, it's a little bit, I don't know. I think for me, the moment was when I realized, wow, most people on TV are younger than me. Like that's a huge moment.
You know what? Something kind of like that happened to me, except it was, wow, people on TV are my age. Like Zendaya is a year younger than me. So I was like, whoa, that's weird. You know, so.
Well, also when, okay, so you guys know I used to teach at RISD. So for the longest time, I was closer in age to the students than I was to their parents. And now I'm like, okay, I'm like almost the same age as your parents now. It's like really wacky when that happens.
That's so funny. Imagine I'll probably
so think. is this jacket really hard or is this just me?
It's tough. It's definitely tough. I spent a little time on the face just now, but I don't know. I like the how angular it is. I think that's probably my favorite part about drawing folds is when they have really crisp edges. And since I've seen that a lot in this, I'm like, oh, this is cool. All I have to do is darken something out.
Do you think maybe that clothing that's more rigid is a little bit easier to tackle than like super flowy soft stuff?
I guess it depends on how many folds it has. Because if it's like if it's like a silk skirt and there's like a trillion folds in there, then it's like I don't really want to deal with that. But if it's, I guess it depends on how thick the material is. First off, I don't know.
Well, because I feel like with the leather jacket, because it's thicker and it's not super soft and flowy, there's like not as broad of a range of tension compared to like a silk scarf. I don't know. I feel like it just feels more concrete to me. It's like more defined.
Right. No, that's true. That's fair.
There are a lot of freaking wrinkles though. Oh my God.
But you got plenty of time to fix it though. So you're gonna be okay.
Oh, look at this. So Anna says borderline millennial / Gen Y. I can sing Patti Smith, Courtney Love, and some Whitesnake. I remember Whitesnake. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
those hairdos.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Sorry to disappoint. No clue who Whitesnake is.
Let's see. Ayane says, I'm Gen Z. I love 70s and 80s. I was just listening to some Michael Jackson. My kids will not listen to anything I recommend, Jordan. Is this just because I'm their mother? And it's like, oh, you're my mom. You must suck at music.
I don't know, because I was I didn't have a choice. Like, my mom would be very careful about what I listened to up until the time I was about 13. And whatever she played on the radio or on her CD, that's what I liked. You know,
if it was really?
If it was Janet Jackson, if it was Michael Jackson, if it was, you know, Stevie Wonder, or if it was Jay-Z, that's what I liked because I didn't know anything else.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. Like, the second my husband and I try to, like, play something for our kids, they're like, we don't want to listen to this. This is terrible. We hate this. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just thought maybe my mom just has, like, supreme taste in music, supremely good taste in music. I don't know. I didn't mind it at all. Because every time, because she's the one who introduced me to all that stuff. And so I was like, and clearly the stuff she introduced me to was impactful. And, you know, a lot of other people seemed to like it. So it worked. Only issue was I was like the youngest one in the room, knowing all the stuff that was like 40 years ahead of me, you know. And none of my friends could really relate until I got much older. So,
although I do think the 80s have the best music videos. I watch the music videos now and they're so like, okay, I know I sound like an old fart, but they're all the same. Like, I don't feel like I can distinguish between them. Like, of course you were probably not born yet, but like when Thriller came out, that was such a big deal when that video, the music video came out.
Yeah, I believe it. I was not alive yet. Thriller came out 12 years before I was born, or 13, something like that.
Tell me in the chat, who here remembers watching Thriller premiere on television and how like all of our heads exploded when we saw that video? Everybody was like, oh my God.
You know what? Obviously, I couldn't watch it live, but I do remember the very first time I watched it. I freaked out because no one told me what it was going to be. I just thought it was going to be the song. And I was like, okay.
Oh, you didn't know it was scary?
No. I was just like, it's going to be some cool dancing. So what it was, back in the days of Blockbuster, my mom and I, on Fridays, we would go to Blockbuster and we would get, I would get like two things. I would get like a game and a movie or something. And I found this Michael Jackson, like, greatest hits videos. I was like, oh, let's check it out. My mom, obviously a huge fan, she let me get it. And so I watched Thriller for the first time, and I practically pissed my pants because I'm like, what is that? I'm like, oh my gosh, he's a werewolf. You know, and I'm like eight. I'm like 8 years old, and I'm not understanding, like, all the stuff that's going on. And I'm like, what is this? Why is he a freaking werewolf? Like, what happened to I Want You Back? And you know, Ben and him singing about little dead rats and stuff. Like, what's going on? So, yeah.
That's hilarious because, you know, something, I think I knew it was about zombies because there probably was like press stuff about it in advance, but I didn't know it was going to be, and I was the same age as you. I was like eight when I saw it. And I remember being so scared. Like, I couldn't watch it. Like, I watched like a minute of it and then had to leave because it was so scary.
Yeah. Yeah, the part that got me was the first, like, get away! And, you know, when he does that, and then at the very end, when his eyes, you know,
turn yellow,
I was like, oh, uh-uh. And for a long time, I would keep renting that video, but I would skip track 5, because that one was Thriller.
Oh, really?
I would go straight from Beat It to the Bad music video. And so,
oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, that's how I would do it for years. And then I rewatched it, you know, knowing not to be scared. And I saw all the little tricks that they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's all that was? Dang. Okay.
So Jordan, now we have to share what movie traumatized you as a child that you remember just being so scared of. Do you have one? Okay, I'll tell you mine. Mine was Superman 3. Because there's a scene at the end, there's this woman who gets like pulled into this machine, like the machine like eats her and it like latches all these metal parts onto her body and it covers her whole body. So she turns into a robot. Oh my God. I had nightmares about that for so long. Like it's, I still don't want to watch that movie to this day.
Sheesh. Okay.
That was intense.
Sounds like it.
It was so bad.
Wow. Oh, I'm trying to think. You know, I don't know if there was a specific movie because I knew myself well enough. I was like, scary and me, we just don't go together. Even today, I don't like scary movies.
Oh, you don't?
I don't. I really don't. It just, I don't like the idea of purposely getting scared. You know what I mean? It's like purposely putting my hand over the stove. Like, who does that? You know?
Yeah, except without being like physically injured.
I don't know. So, but what I was scared by, my aunt used to, she still loves all these shows like with like Criminal Minds type of stuff where it's like a murder mystery.
Yeah.
You know, anything that had to do with murder or solving a mystery or just anything like that would freak me out. Nowadays, I'm not as scared by that. Like I can watch Criminal Minds if I, you know, all day. But back then, that was not for me. Nope. I was, someone said, suddenly just says the only movie that really scared me was The Exorcist. I never seen it. I don't plan on seeing it for that reason alone.
Yeah, you don't need to see that, Jordan. If you don't like scary movies, wait. Have you seen The Shining?
I have seen The Shining. That's actually one horror movie that I like, but I didn't see it till I was much older. I was like,
oh, okay,
19 when I saw that for the first time.
You know what I think is amazing? I actually did not know what Red Rum was. Don't tell anybody. I'm sure everybody here knows, but I didn't know what Red Rum was, and I watched a movie. I was like, oh my God, that like blew my mind, that one scene.
You know, I'm in the same boat. I didn't know that either.
Oh, you didn't? Because most people already know by the time they see the movie what Red Rum is.
Well, I'd heard Red Rum, but I didn't know what it was from, you know? And so, yeah, I was just like, okay, whatever.
Oh, wow. Look at all these movies. Let's see. Orange Cat says, Ouija, Origin of Evil. Well, with a title like that, wow. What do you expect?
Yeah, I wouldn't watch that. You put that on yourself.
AJ says, Indiana Jones 3, the last one where the Germans die from the Holy Grail.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. That scene where he gets all rotten.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was dope. I love that. I love that movie, that Indiana Jones. It's just classic. We should have done Indiana Jones. Dang it.
For clothes?
He's got the leather jacket.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, my God, I'm so dumb. How come now you're telling me all these great zigzag fold movies, Jordan?
It's AJ's fault.
It's AJ's fault.
Indiana Jones. Sorry, throw you under the bus. I hope we could still be friends and that you enjoyed the channel.
Oh my gosh, you're already drawing Naomi Osaka. I'm curious to know how you're going to do that pink suit. Are you going to color it?
I wasn't planning on it, but I could, maybe. We'll see. See how I feels. See how I feel.
I wish I could draw faster.
I think it's just honestly the tools because
yeah,
back and forth and I'm like, nope, Apple Pencil, let's do this. Like I don't even have to worry about sharpening, you know.
Yeah, oh that's true. Oh my goodness. Good point. Well, so okay, the video that I was editing for, I really think honestly I did 10 hours on Saturday alone. And then I think I did like 8 hours on Sunday. But it's with my friend Kathy Speranza, who is a brilliant painter. And she's like everything I am not. Like I usually like press down really hard with my drawings or I use like super soft materials. And she uses like the hardest pencils and she draws really slow. But you know what's weird? Watching her work, like going through the footage, it made me want to draw slow. Isn't that strange?
Yeah. That happens to me, except it's the opposite, and I want to draw fast.
What do you mean?
What do I mean?
Yeah, like you watch other people draw faster, you want to draw faster?
Yeah, because you know how efficient I would be if I was like, you know, I know people think I'm fast now sometimes. I've heard people say that, but I've seen faster, and I'm like, I want to get to that level. So, yeah. when I saw my professor do a head sketch in 2 minutes flat, I was like, okay, there's more. There's more I can do.
Oh, there's always more for sure. Ayane says, me too, Professor Liu. It's not the tool. I am much slower on digital. Oh, I'm super slow on digital because half the time I don't even know what I'm doing. So part of it's lack of experience. But you know what I admire, Jordan, about the slow pace? It's like when I was watching the footage of her drawing, it's like I felt like I could see her thinking and absorbing. I was like, you know, everybody's in such a rush now. It's like really nice to see somebody like really just being, right?
I guess so. I don't know. I think some people can disguise it. Like Bob Ross paints super quickly, but he doesn't look like he's in a rush. He just, it's just like magic almost. It's like brush stroke here, done, you know?
Right. Maybe it just depends on your approach.
Yeah.
But I guess after watching her draw for that tutorial, I was like, oh man, I wish I could just sit and work on a drawing for so long and not care about how long it was taking.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be really nice. Maybe well, one.
Because you don't get a lot of opportunities to do that when you work professionally, right?
No.
Just everyone take wants forever.
It. Everyone wants it before the assignment was assigned. It's like, I need this 4 days ago. I need this yesterday.
Maria is asking, if you're drawing with the Apple Pencil, can you use the side of it like a real one and get a wider stroke, like get a thicker and thinner line without having to change the settings?
Yes, depending on the brush you're using. So I have like a sketchy brush. So if I, I'm drawing on the tip just like this, you see this, you know, pencil strokes are very thin. But if I hold it to the side like this, you will see, wait, make this a little bigger. It's a slightly bigger brush. Let me see, let me try a different one. Some brushes are rather. There we go. Yeah, so that's the side of the pencil. And then this is the tip of the pencil. So yes, you can do that. It's really awesome.
You showed me how to do that. And honestly, I found it kind of hard.
It's the same exact thing you would do normally, though.
No, it's not.
Why? Why is it not?
I don't know. It just like wasn't easy for me.
But it doesn't mean you're holding the pencil the same way, though. So I don't understand.
I don't know. I just like traditional better. I like the way it feels. It's hard to explain.
There's nothing wrong with that. I have no choice but to do it digital. Like the whole industry
right.
has shifted. Like people who were trained traditionally had to learn how to switch. Like Nathan Fouts, who we talked about on plenty of streams before. He had to adjust. And now he can
well,
really well.
I'll tell you, if I worked in freelance illustration, I totally would do digital because of all the changes that they want you to make all the time. Like that must just be such a lifesaver.
It is, but changes are still frustrating nonetheless.
Of course they are.
You know, like no matter what you do, it's like, ugh, you know. So yeah, that's just the nature of it. But yes, it does save time, especially if you work on different layers, which I highly recommend in most scenarios.
So what's the most difficult change somebody has ever asked you to make for a commission or a job?
Most difficult change. It's not so much, usually when they ask for a change that is so much, I will just say, pay me more or no, pay me enough. But the challenge comes from when they try to make too many changes. Like not that long ago, I was taking some changes from someone and I was typing up notes in bullet point. And he was like, so when do you think you're going to get this done? And I was like, I don't know, man. You gave me literally a page of typed notes with bullet point. And, you know, I can't, like, it's on you. Like, you guys stop nitpicking, you know?
I know.
So it's like, yeah, it is what it is.
Oh, it's incredible the degree of nitpicking you can get from a client. It's just like, just stop, like, just chill. Like, people can get so anal about stuff that just does not matter.
Yeah, yeah. There's been times where they want me to add something, and they're like, yeah, can you add, like, a nose ring on this person? And I'm like, dude, you will literally I enunciate every, you know, every syllable. You will literally not see it. Like, and I am not kidding. It's like me going like a dot, like a dart, like I just threw a dart, you know? It's like, it's not going to be seen at all. It's frustrating. So,
yeah. So I did this commission once where it was this mother and her two kids, and one of the girls was reading a book and the other girl was playing cello and the mother was playing piano. And it was like a big scene. It was like their whole living room, the three figures, the piano, the cello. It was like a very complicated composition. Oh my God, she kept pestering me about what music was on the piano. I'm like, lady, this is like 2 inches of the painting. Why do you, like, it took her so many emails to figure that out. I was like, oh my God, why?
Like, wait, so like the music sheet in the painting was an issue for her?
Well, she couldn't decide which piece of music she wanted on the piano. Like, oh, well, should I put this Beethoven sonata here? But maybe it would be better if it was the Mozart. And I'm like, nobody can see this. Okay. It does not matter.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That sounds like a nightmare.
Oh, it was such a pain in my ass. I was just like, come on. And then there is a chair that was in the image and I painted the chair, but I was sitting sort of far away. I couldn't see the chair that well, but the woman was very insistent that I paint the stitching on the chair because it was like a custom chair and she had picked the colors. And I was like, oh my God.
I remember this story. You told us this at the on the last day of class.
Yes.
I remember that. That sounded so awful.
Oh, it was the worst. I was like, come on, chill out. Wow, you guys are having a lot of chatting in here in the chat. I'm sorry I can't get to everything, but it's great that we're all talking about all these scary, traumatic moments.
Yes.
Let's see. Rachel is asking, is Clara using Faber-Castell polychromo pencils? I am using these. They're called Albrechter watercolor pencils. And by the way, in case you guys are wondering, we do have links to all the art supplies that we're using in the YouTube video description below. So if you want to see the exact set that I'm using, you guys can definitely get in there. But I like these a lot. They're not too soft, not too crumbly, which I don't like, but they're also not really hard. I don't like colored pencils that are super ultra hard. But yeah, these are really nice pencils. Sketch Pause says, this is perfect. I was just about to do fabric studies in charcoal. Well, isn't that cool when things line up that way?
Nice. I love it.
Valerie says, that's why being an abstract / surrealism artist is a little easier, because when people ask me for commission work, they just give me color schemes and then trust my style. It depends on the commission. Yeah, there are some commissions that are just a lot more straightforward, or people are not so picky about certain things, but portrait commissions are just the worst. It's like, oh my God, that's why I quit doing them. I just couldn't take it anymore. The crazy clients and, oh.
Yeah. I'm a commission, but based on the stories that you tell, I don't know if I do.
It's really not that fun. See, here's the thing, Jordan. What's your take on this? I'm curious. So I think there's a lot of people who invest their self-worth as an artist into whether they are making money from their art. So it's like a lot of people think, oh, well, I'm not a successful artist unless I make 100% of my income from my artwork. But I don't know. I don't think that's always the case. Like, sometimes I like to do work that's not paid at all because I can just do whatever I want and not have to please anybody.
You know, I actually saw something on Instagram a couple months ago that was asking some, or saying that same question, asking it. And it was saying that we are not, as humans, we are not products. You know, we're not necessarily meant to be monetized the same way. And, it's totally fine if you just have something that's a hobby or you just find something fun. You don't have to turn it into a career path. And so I would say that artistic worthiness shouldn't come from how much money you make from it. However, I will say that it is really nice that people recognize my skills, my talents, you know, especially when they pay me properly and earn their
right.
Have no problem with it. They're like, oh, you're worth such and such? Psh, no problem. You know, like that to me is really fulfilling personally. But I've also
right.
a different path than a lot of other people.
I just feel like I've seen a lot of artists, like they really get down on themselves. Like they say, oh, I'm not a good artist because I have to work a non-art job to stay alive, stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. There are a ton of people that do that. And we actually have a video. It's called An Art Job Can Ruin Your Studio Practice. That is surprising that sometimes it's like those commissions that I was doing, it just made it so unpleasant. Like it made me not want to paint, which I don't think is good.
I think everyone has their limits and everyone needs to be able to make up some sort of boundary for themselves because not everything is for everyone. Like there are some people who sure are amazing artists, but have probably wouldn't do well in to try and do freelance because it just makes them not want to do art anymore. And I would rather spend their time creating than dealing with something that they don't want to do or have no passion. But
I mean, that's one of the reasons I never became a professional musician is because like I just wanted to play for fun. Like I didn't want to play music and be like, oh, I have to win this competition or I can't mess up any note because I'm gonna lose my job. Like I didn't want that to taint my time playing music.
Yeah, I've heard of stories like that. I've had some candid talks with my teachers every once in a while, and some of them will say that art isn't as enjoyable for them anymore because they've gotten to such a high level that it's like, I want to do other things. I want to work on music. I want to work on film. I want to work on writing, and, you know, and to some people, it's kind of more like a grind to them. And I don't know. I mean, 30 years, I might get to that stage. I have no idea, but I can understand how it would be tough.
Well, just wait till you have your first midlife crisis, Jordan.
You know, I was having a more like motivational statement after that, but thank you.
I don't know. I had my first midlife crisis early, and that helped. It actually did.
Ask how early.
Damini says, finally, I came. I was missing a lot of your lives. I'm so happy that I attend. That is so cool. I'm so glad you can be here, Damini. And Anna says, I don't use money as a barometer, but I do use shows, reviews, and grants as a barometer for success. Well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that's what the industry looks for, at least in the fine art world. I mean, it depends on what industry you're in. Anna says, following up, looking at artists who have more of those things than me makes me feel like a failure. Well, how do you deal with that, Jordan? Because there's always people that are more successful, right? More quote successful.
Yeah. I mean, there's always someone who's going to be better. There's always going to, you know, there's someone who's won more awards, more grants, or has been printed in more magazines or whatever the case is. And I don't think it's a good idea to wage your success based on other people. I don't think it's healthy. And if you, I think what would happen is, let's say you don't meet that mark, then you're forever going to feel like you're not good enough. But what happens if you do, then suddenly there's nothing else to achieve. You've reached the top now. And some people find a lot of, have a lot of struggle with that because they feel like there's not purpose. Like I know someone, not I don't know him personally, but there's an artist that I really like, and he had been working on a graphic novel project for years. When he finally finished it, he said he became so depressed because that he spent all his time and his effort working on it, and now that it was done and complete and successful, he's like, now where do I go? So you know, that can be just as challenging.
Oh, I bet. It's sort of like winning the Olympic gold medal in figure skating. It's like, okay, what do I do now? Yeah. Right? Like you have to find a way to sustain yourself that is not dependable on outside factors that you can't control because it can get really depressing really fast.
Right.
I mean, that happened to me basically because I was in academia. In academia, there's so many, there's like a checklist. It's like win a grant, be in museum collections, have a gallery. It's all these things. And it's like, I was so depressed, Jordan, because I had been in academia for like 10 years. And I was like, I don't have any of this. I don't have tenure. I'm not in all these museum collections. I don't have, it's so depressing to like define yourself by that. And now that I don't, I'm much happier.
Yeah, I think it's all about enjoying the process. Like, there's so much more to life than waging your worth, depending on, how many images you sell or how many times you appear in a magazine and or whatever the case is, whatever the situation is for a particular creative. And I don't know. I think, as much as I love art, there's more important things to life than my practice. I just happen to find something that I could do for a career that I also happen to really enjoy, besides the fact that I can make money from.
So I'm curious, since we're on the topic, how many of you guys in the chat like having art not be a professional thing you do? That it's sort of like what I described about music, that it's like a place where you don't have to worry about the money thing, you don't have to worry about getting the job. Like, how many of you guys is art, does art occupy that place for you? Because you know what's funny, Jordan, is sometimes I feel like I'd rather not do something than do it badly. Does that
Yeah,
make sense?
I get that.
Well, because here's an example. So like when I was in high school, I was like hardcore volleyball player. Like I did like Junior Olympics. I like went to volleyball camp and I was like really, really good at volleyball. And then like I tried to play with a league a couple years ago and I hated it because like I couldn't play at the level that I used to play at. It's kind of like that. Like it was more painful for me to play at a lower level.
I could see how that would be frustrating. Again, I think everyone has their own definition of success, and that's why I think it's better when someone will define success based on something that they can constantly grow in. Like, even if it's just to get better at art, that's different than saying I want to win a particular prize. Because once you reach your goal, then it's over with. But there are some artists who are phenomenal and are and sometimes even better than any of us will ever be by the time we die. And yet they still are like, I want to do more. There's more I can achieve. There's more mediums to learn. There's more things to do. And and I also think there's a lot to be said about just simply inspiring people. Like, that's something that I don't think will go away. I think that's important.
Well, you know what's funny, Jordan, is I get a lot of messages. Well, we get a lot of messages on Instagram and just email and stuff like that. And I've gotten a lot of messages where people say, oh, well, I'm sure you hear this all the time. And I'm probably just one person out of many, but you've helped me so much with my work. And they'll say something like that. I'm like, dude, keep going. I'm like, I will never get tired of somebody telling me that I got them excited to do something or I help them understand. Like that never gets tiring for me. I love every minute of that.
It's the best. Yeah, it's the most rewarding thing to me, especially as being in a position of a teacher or something. Like, that's got to be so invigorating, just to know that someone was in a weak spot and you showed them something or said something and it just pushed them. And I think that's how people pay it forward. There's several people in my life who pushed me to do art. And like, for example, I just met with or had a Skype call with one of my first professors from when I was 10 years old, and he asked me to talk to his current class about character design. And it's 15 years later, and so I get to pay it forward in that way. It's really, really cool. Get to talk to a bunch of seventh graders.
That's amazing.
It's fun.
Well, see, that's the thing. So, what I didn't like about academia, I just always felt like I was waiting for somebody else. Like I would like submit for a grant or I'd submit for a show or I'd send this to a curator. And I just felt like so much of my energy was sucked up from like just, oh, are they going to accept me? Oh, well, oh my God, this curator showed interest, or I had this studio visit, maybe it'll go well. And I got so tired of feeling like I had to be defined by other people.
Yeah, that's another good point, because a lot of the things that people worry about to be successful are things they cannot control. You know, you do your best, but it's other people making those decisions of who wins something. And, but I think if you're happy with what you're doing just on your own, you know, then that's a huge step. Like, if you build it, they will come, you know?
Ayane says, I would want to do more comics, fine art painting as a job, but more realistically, I'd probably end up in graphic design. And Elizabeth says, I purposely have worked for years so that I can live on my pension and not be concerned about selling work. Yeah, I did a similar thing, Elizabeth, with teaching, where because I taught, I didn't have to feel like I had to cater my work to the art market. I really felt like I could just do whatever I wanted in my studio time. And that was a big benefit of teaching, is not having that to hold me down. Because I know some artists get a lot of pressure from their dealers or from the gallery to like do a certain kind of work, and that can really be hard.
Yeah, I don't know what that's like. I'm a slightly different world.
I know, but it's cool to hear about all the nuances of each industry.
It is, actually. Like, there are some things I never would have thought about, just the way to handle certain situations, or just having a studio space. Like, that's one. I'm like, studio space? Like, my bed's like right there. I just have a desk. So I'm just like, okay, I never, that didn't cross my mind. I never thought about that. So,
well, and I also think sometimes until you really are doing it, you don't really know like what the industry is like. When I was at RISI, there are always students over winter session, which is like a short term. It's like 6-5 weeks or something like that. And people use it to experiment and try out different things. But a lot of freshmen, like if they wanted to go into industrial design, they would take like an industrial design class just to like get their feet wet a little bit before going in the major. And so many freshmen, they take the class and be like, I had no idea that's what graphic design was. Like, I didn't know it was all digital. And so that was like a good way for them to realize, oh, okay, what I thought was graphic design is actually not graphic design. Isn't that strange?
Strange in what way? Like, strange that they're just finding this out, or just like how their opinions change?
Well, I think just that your perception of what you think is actually involved in being in that field, it's oftentimes not accurate.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is true. Just being in the schools that I've been in, I feel like a lot of my perceptions changed over time. And I don't know, it's when I took winter session courses, I always felt like I wanted to get back to what I wanted to do. Like,
oh, really?
Because the way it worked was, you know, it's time slot thing. So, you know, if you get the good time slot, then you could choose your class and hopefully get in. Most of the time I had really poor time slots, and I got into class and I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm so glad I'm not going in this direction, because this is making me miserable. So, yeah.
You know what I think is interesting about you, Jordan, is most students who I worked with at RISD, it was really hard for them to know what type of stuff they wanted to do, but you always knew, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You never doubted it, did you?
Nope, not once. Well, I take that back. There was one time in the middle of my sophomore year where there's a particular class I was taking that really discouraged me, and I felt like I wasn't getting better. And it just felt like a lot of pressure to do stuff that I was, this is, how am I going to apply this in the field I actually want to go in? And so I was really discouraged. And I did think about quitting art for a little bit, actually.
Like all art or just that department?
Both. Because I was like,
are you serious?
Mm-hmm. And I was like, if this is what it is, then I don't want to be a part of it. Like, maybe I've lost the joy or something. And, you know, it was really tough for me because I didn't have anyone to give me answers. And I also, it's a difficult conversation to have because you're spending all this money to go to a school. And, you know, I just think looking back, I really just think it was that particular class and that teacher and I just didn't see eye to eye on how things should be. And so that, you know, it really kind of put me in a certain space. Other people in the class found it was perfectly fine and it encouraged them and pushed them forward. For me, I didn't think like that. Other than that one scenario, no, I never doubted what I wanted to do.
Well, because here's the thing. I had a former student call me up about a week ago, and they have been struggling a lot, as many people are, with the pandemic. They had been laid off, and they'd been unemployed for a while, and they were saying, like, you know, I don't know that I want to do the major I went to art school for. And I guess talking to them about it, they were like, oh, well, I feel so much guilt about, like, well, I'm not using the skills I went to school for. And maybe that means art school is a big waste of time. And they were saying to me, well, you know, I've been sort of thinking about culinary school, but I feel strange about this. And I was like, go! Like, if you want to go to culinary school, go! Like, who cares what you majored in, right? And I just don't believe this whole, like, art school fantasy of, like, how you're a failure if you're not doing what you majored in. You ever see that?
Yeah, I don't know what that stigma is about, because I totally understand, like, I've seen that happen. And but if you talk about, like, a liberal arts major, let's say you're an English major and you turn out to do something completely different, no one cares, no one bats an eye, or philosophy or whatever. But when it comes to art, it's slightly different. And I think everyone should have the freedom to choose what it is that they want to do. And if they don't find an interest in it, or if they don't want to do it full time, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. As long as you're not going into $1 trillion in debt getting those degrees, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't invest in something like left-handed German puppetry or something like that. You know, like, I probably wouldn't do something like that, but, you know, it's, yeah, it is what it is.
Also, I just felt really bad that the student felt that they were a failure for wanting to go to culinary school. You know, I'm like, if you want to go, go. And I just don't think schools need to be so one track about career options.
Yeah. You know, actually, I'm going to refer to this comment we have here because it goes right along with what I want to say. It says, I wish I was like you, Jordan. I mean, I know what I want to do as it's what I said before, but I don't know how realistic it might be. That's something that I think a lot of people face and struggle. The way I looked at it, I'm not saying everyone should look at it the way I did, but I remember watching a video of Will Smith and he said, there's no reason to have a plan B because it distracts from plan A. Now, again, I'm not saying don't have a plan B. So don't, you know, for those of you who are under 18 and living with mom and dad, don't say that some random kid on YouTube told you plan B. But what I am saying is that sometimes that dream, you just have to believe in it enough to actually go for it. Like, I remember my father used to tell me all the time, like, Jordan, I know you want to do this art thing, but you don't know if it's going to work and you might want to have a plan B. And I was like, no. And I'll tell you what, guys, to this day, I do not have a plan B and I'm doing just fine. So, you know, sometimes it's just tenacity. That's all it takes. Because there's a way
to. Also, I think that if you guys try it and you're like, I don't like it, it's fine to do something else.
Right. Right. No shame in that. I would rather.
No shame in that.
I would rather people be happy in what they do rather than follow someone else.
And I do see a lot of students, they say to me, oh my God, I didn't get a book deal. I'm like, nobody gets a book deal. And they're like, oh my God, I'm so terrible. I'm like, no, that you are not terrible. It's just so insanely competitive that it actually has very little to do with you.
Right. You know what I find intimidating? Hearing about how actors for films get roles, like how many people they have to go up against.
Oh my God.
A lot of you guys know I'm a huge fan of Spider-Man, and I really like Tom Holland's portrayal of him. But if you listen to him tell it, he said he was going up against like 7,000 people all trying to play the role. And like, can you imagine standing literally like in line with 7,000 people in front of you? And, you know, you have no idea. It's not like you're watching all of these auditions. You're just there hoping to get a shot. And then they call you back and they narrow it down to 20 and they narrow it down to 10 and 5 and 3. And then you finally get it and you're like, I've arrived. And that's why Tom Holland's in like every other movie that comes on. You just see him in everything now.
Well, I think the thing that scares me about the whole acting situation is I had a friend who was an actor and they were like, yep, I didn't get the part because my nose is too big. Like, isn't that annoying? Like, yeah, I'm too short. I didn't get the part. It's like, oh my God, that must be so frustrating.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I have a friend who's an actress. She's currently on a show called All Rise, I believe it is called. And she was telling me just some of the difficulties of it. Just like, yeah, you know, there are times where my agents weren't calling me back and, you know, someone said this and blah, blah. And it's tough, but she persevered. Now she got a, you know, she's a main cast member on this show. It's like, that's so awesome, you know, because that's dedication. That doesn't just happen.
Art is Fun says, never thought of doing murals for a living until the money started coming in. It made it easy for me to be there to raise my boys and bring income to the household more than a minimum wage job would pay. I also fell in love with that kind of painting. Well, good for you. That's awesome. I mean, we're not trying to say that it's necessarily so impossible. It's just, I don't think it's as automatic as people think it is. I think a lot of people go to art school and they're like, oh, I just go to school, I take classes, I'm all set. And I'm like, no, there's a whole world of other things that you need to learn to do. And I don't think it's the field that determines your success. I think it's you.
Yeah, I agree. No one, when I was hired at DreamWorks, no one ever asked me what school I went to. Like,
oh no, nobody cares.
Yeah, no one cares. Like, there are plenty of people who have director roles or show creator roles who didn't go to art school or anything. I know, matter of fact, one of my favorite artists, LaShawn Thomas, he has 3 animated shows he's currently working on in Tokyo for Netflix right now, all created by him. He didn't even go to college, let alone art school. And he just worked his butt off and was really good. And like, that's, you know, that's his career, you know, that's all you need. And to be a good person. Don't be a jerk.
That does go a long way.
Yeah.
Because, Jordan, I don't forget when somebody's mean to me.
Yeah.
I got a list.
Ooh. You sound like Santa Claus.
Well, I have 2 lists. One is the blacklist. If you're on the blacklist, you might be able to come back. Like, it's okay. You might have a chance. Uh-huh. And there's another list, starts with an S, Pitt. And if you're on that list, it's all over for you. You're not coming back.
Oh, snap. Is it a literal list that you write out, or is it like a mental list?
I just remember.
Got it. You ever see
that? That's the person who couldn't be bothered to say thank you.
You ever see you know, you just remind me of, you ever see Billy Madison?
No, is that with Adam Sandler?
Yeah. So the movie is really silly and stupid, but Adam Sandler's character basically goes back to school to repeat grades 1 through 12 so he can inherit his father's hotel business or whatever. And so at some point he starts getting bullied when he starts entering the high school era. And so he calls up like a guy he used to bully. I think he's played by Steve Buscemi. That's the guy he's calling up. And he said, hey, you know what? I just realized, you know, 20 years ago, I was such a jerk to you. And I'm so sorry and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. They hang up the phone. And then on his wall right next to him is a list of people to kill. And 7 people. And he just crosses off Billy Madison's name. And he just is like, ah, that's better.
Oh my gosh.
It's just so weird. Well, and then he puts lipstick for some reason. It's just odd. It's just a weird scene. But it was hilarious.
Well, I don't have a kill list. But I do have people who I'm not going to get a recommendation from me, and who I will just always remember.
Yeah. You never know who's going to come back and bite you. As a matter of fact, I heard a story recently. My friend told me that she went on a date with this guy. We all went to high school together. And she went on a date with this guy who I used to have a lot of issues with growing up. And he was basically a bully. And then she told me about it and told me like how his life had like really gone downhill since graduating high school. And I was like, dang, like, I don't even know what to say. It's like, I'm not ecstatic, but I'm not sad either. You know? It's like, it might sound mean, but I was like, this one's just,
Jordan, I think that is the cruelest Jordan I have ever seen or heard of.
I'm not saying I wish it upon him. I'm just saying.
Compared to me, where I'm like, I want to inflict Count of Monte Cristo revenge.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm not going to do the revenge. I think life will just happen. I think you reap what you sow in life. So, you know, that's all it is. And so she told me that. I was like, what do you know?
Ha, see, Jordan, I feel so validated. Dina says, I have a list too. I thought only I could do that.
Ooh, some sharks up in here. That's awesome. That's hilarious. Like,
Dina's also saying, I live in Egypt with very little education, appreciation for art overall. Should I fight for a scholarship to study abroad now, or should I just major in anything now and self-study with courses? It's tricky, Dina, because I don't know exactly what type of work you make or what career you want to go into. And honestly, I try not to give people advice about what school they should or should not go to. It's such a personal decision. Like, I don't feel comfortable giving people advice on that, but I would say it just doesn't hurt to try. Like, I just feel that people shouldn't eliminate themselves. Like, if it doesn't cost you an astronomical amount of money to apply, just do it. Like, if you don't get in, you're in the same place that you started. I don't know, you have any advice, Jordan?
Yeah, you know, something my mom always tells me, because I often doubt myself a lot when it comes to big opportunities, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't apply here, or you know, I shouldn't do this because they're going to say no. And then my mom will always interrupt me and be like, let them tell you no. And so true, because sorry, my head is all weird now. But yeah, just letting them tell you no, just it frees you up, because there's some things that you can control and some things you can't. In your case, you can control the fact that you're applying and the artwork that you put in. What you cannot control is whether or not they accept you. And, you know, if they do, you have a brand new opportunity to go to a brand new place and get this education, meet new people, and, you know, outweigh the costs or the pros and the cons, I guess.
Well, so Jordan, I had a colleague who got a full professor position, and they were pretty young, and they told me at one point, they're like, you know, when I saw that job listing, I wasn't going to apply. I was like, well, then why did you apply? They were like, oh, well, I had a professor who told me you should apply, because why not? And they told me, well, I wasn't going to apply because I didn't think I was qualified. But then they applied and they got the job. So it's like,
yeah, you know what? There's a lot of crazy stories. I actually just saw something my mom sent to me the other day, but it said, this 10-year-old tech genius in Nigeria or something is now teaching a class at one of the top universities in the world. He's 10 years old, you know? And most people would say 10-year-olds need to be watching SpongeBob and eating Lunchables. You know, they don't need to be teaching college classes. And yet this girl's doing it. Like, she's killing it. And despite her age and all that stuff. So you never know what can happen. Awesome.
Well, and so much of the time, like, I sometimes help former students when they're needing some career advice or something like that. And I'll say to them, well, why don't you think about this job or this field? They're like, oh, well, I don't have the skills for that. And I'm like, you'll get the skills. You'll gain the skills on the job. Like, you guys would be amazed. Being a nice, competent, responsible person, it goes a long way.
Yeah. I actually saw this quote. I forget the guy's name, but I'm pretty sure he owns Virgin Records. And he said that anytime he's offered a position that he's not qualified for, he takes it anyway. He'll take it anyway and learn on the job. He's like, just say yes, and you'll
figure it out. Well, don't you think, like, especially for animation, where the technology is just always changing, and each company has their own system and their own software, it's like nobody can teach you that in school. Like, you have to learn that on the job.
I think actually most art education is going to be learned on your own, whether you go to a school or you do online classes or something, because you can get all the information you need at a quality school, but practicing and putting in the pencil mileage and all that stuff, that's going to take time. And that's something that no one can do but the individual artist. And so I think that's where it all really comes down to. Just, you need those hours. You need to, you know, spend some time alone in the cave and, you know, rock yourself to sleep every night crying, you know. So that happens every once in a while.
Oh my God, Jordan, the principal oboe player of the New York Philharmonic. I read this article about him, and they said that he practices oboe in the closet so that he doesn't sound too good. And so he has to work like extra hard to sound better because he's playing in a closet.
That's kind of awesome, actually. That's brilliant.
I know, isn't it? Like, that's somebody who really wants it. Yeah. Like, do you know how horrible it must sound to play an instrument in a closet?
I don't, because as much as I love music, I know nothing about how it operates and the mechanics behind it. I can imagine that that's got to be tough.
I used to play in the Brown Orchestra, and they had these, like, soundproof, like, cubes you could practice in. So you could go practice at, like, 1 a.m. and not bother anybody. But, like, I hated the way it sounded. It was just the worst sound quality ever.
Yeah, I bet that's tough.
But then it's like when you do play in like a nice hall, it's like, oh my God, I sound amazing because I've been practicing in this like soundproof cube for months.
I bet that's like the equivalent of having poor lighting while you draw.
Just like, oh, it's like that, because it's like, it just looks terrible.
Yeah.
Or sounds terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a question from Lisa, who says, how do you keep track of which fold is which? Lisa, for me, I have dominant folds, sort of like checkpoints, where I'm like, okay, well, this fold here is a really deep, dark one. Like, that one has to be very visible. And I'll say, okay, this one here, in fact, I should probably emphasize it, like, this one is a very dark, very like dramatic swooping moment. And I would also say this one here has a very dramatic angle. So it's like, I pick a few that are like the main folds. And then if some of the folds in between the main folds fall apart, it's not as big of a problem. I don't know, you have a system, Jordan?
I mean, honestly, I just think about where I'm drawing, you know, what type of fold makes sense in this location. And the thing is, most people are not going to look at your reference and see if it's a one-for-one exact copy or replica. And so as long as it makes sense, you should be fine. You should be okay. As far as keeping track, though, I don't know. You could make little checkpoints for yourself, like put a little mark, you know, like say everything above this is a zigzag, everything below this mark is a spiral, or whatever the case is. Actually, never really thought about that question before.
Well, I think it's a good question because, like, I'm not drawing every single fold. Like, I'm drawing most of them, but there's definitely a few where I'm like, I don't need to have that one. Because unless you want to take 500 hours to do the drawing, it's really hard to get it that accurate.
I'm more about have it make sense rather than one-for-one replication anyway. I just think it's more fun, and no one's going to call you out if it makes sense. So,
well, the thing is, sometimes, like, if you copy your reference really precisely, sometimes it doesn't make sense. You ever seen that?
Yeah, that's happened to me before.
where you're like, I copied everything. I was so accurate. And it's like, it still doesn't look good.
Yeah. That's where artistic license comes into play.
Well, that's why I just could never be a photorealistic painter. It's just, it's too much responsibility. Like, I just don't want that.
Yeah. Have you seen those people that draw like printers and it's just like one line, then one line, then one line? That's crazy. I don't know how to do that.
Ayane says, I'm struggling so much with drawing the hand. The character is supposed to be holding a popsicle in their mouth, but I'm struggling with rhetoric anatomy. Oh, wow. That sounds really complicated. Oh. And Starving Artist says, wonderful sense of fold and the reflective fabric in the jacket, Clara. Well, thank you very much. This was a pretty fun jacket to do. It's nice that it wasn't black because I felt like I'd have more fun with the colors that were going on. Guys, in a few minutes, please join us in the Art Prof Discord. Jordan and I will be hanging out in the Art Alongs channel. If you're not in the Discord, you might want to join because that's where all the cool kids hang out. The invite link is in the YouTube video description below. Subscribe to our YouTube channel so you guys can continue to grow and develop as an artist. And I want to give a big thank you to our top Patreon supporters who are making it possible for us to keep Art Prof 100% free and accessible for everybody. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and talking about music and generations and artistic strengths and weaknesses. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time. Bye.